the issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
For years, Mr. Speaker, books and articles have been written credibly asserting that significant research at Fort Detrick in Plum Island and elsewhere was conducted to turn ticks into bioweapons. In her book, Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons, Chris Newby includes interviews with Dr. Willy Burkdorfer, the researcher who is credited with discovering Lyme disease. Turns out that Dr. Burkdorfer was a bioweapons specialist.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon. What a bizarre story. That was Congressman Chris Smith from New Jersey talking about weaponizing ticks with Lyme disease. He's going to be joining me in just a second here. You're going to want to hear this. It's something I had no idea was going on. I mean, we talked about gain of function when it comes to COVID and to the coronavirus and a lot of these other type of things that happen. We've discussed bioweapons in the past, but Lyme's disease? A little later, I'll have a physician join me who's an expert in it. I know it is debilitating. Armies try all kinds of ways to do what they're supposed to do to protect the people of the land they're defending, right? This has meant that they look at both conventional and unconventional means of doing it. And some of the unconventional means, though, can be, I think, really problematic. A lot of experts believe that China has been working on weaponizing the coronavirus, and it was either accidentally or deliberately released into the wild, and you saw what has happened globally. But it's not just China playing around with these things. It's not. The other day, I received a press release from the great congressman from the state of New Jersey, Congressman Chris Smith. And this is the headline that grabbed my attention. It says, House passes Smith's amendment to probe whether Defense Department weaponized ticks with Lyme disease. I thought, I never heard of that. So I've invited Congressman Smith to stop by just to give us some clarity on what's now unfolding and to talk about a couple other things as well. Congressman Smith, always good to have you here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew, and thanks for having me on. Appreciate all you do.
And thank you. I appreciate what you do. Thanks for covering this issue. This is a strange one. I mean, right now you're talking about the possibility that this may be happening. It might be happening. Give me the background, if you could. I mean, how is this suspicion even raised, and what put it on? How did it get on your radar?
Sure. Well, I've been working on Lyme disease since 1992, and every time I tried to get legislation passed to combat chronic Lyme as well as Lyme itself, you know, with better therapeutics, better testing, I've been stopped. The bills wouldn't get out of committee. Wow. Energy and Commerce, one time, 1998, had a comprehensive bill, and there was aggressive pushback by the Infectious Disease Society of America and others to just look elsewhere, work on something else. We finally got the Tick Act passed a couple of years ago. It is law now. But meanwhile, I became very, very concerned about origins. We've had disease ticks for forever, I'm sure. But the pathogens, the spirochete, which is the actual name of the pathogen, it's a terrible, terrible menace. All of a sudden, we began finding out that at Plum Island and at Fort Detrick, there were numerous reports of testing to try to weaponize ticks and other insects to try to degrade the Soviet Union. So my amendment talks about from 1950 to 1977, looking at GAO investigation into that. But what really prompted, getting support from a number of colleagues was a book called Bitten, B-I-T-T-E-N, wow. The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons, that was written by Chris Newby. She's done other good groundbreaking work in the past, very, very credible. But above all, she actually interviewed Dr. Burkdorfer, who gets all the credit for discovering Lyme disease, and lo and behold, he was a bioweapons specialist.
Wow.
And he shared with her volumes of information about how they did it. It wasn't, and they also worked with, some worked with the plague and other terrible debilitating diseases. But the question that I'm asking is, did it happen? To what extent? Who ordered it? Whether or not there were any releases? Plum Island, if you look where it is, right, in proximity to Lyme, Connecticut, and Long Island, kind of like the epicenter of where this all seemed to take off, where some of these ticks inadvertently, picked up by birds or other things and carried on to into, like I said, Lyme, Connecticut, and elsewhere. So it and it's growing, 300,000 to 470 odd thousand new cases every year.
Wow.
And for years, Drew, years, and I mean years, decades, the internet, the NIH, CDC, people like Dr. Fauci have denied that Lyme, chronic Lyme, even existed. They said just take some doxycycline, take an antibiotic from 2 to 4 weeks, and you're in the clear. And that is absolutely untrue.
Wow.
If you don't catch it early, it migrates throughout the entire body. It hides. It's called the great pretender. A lot of people are misdiagnosed for other things. And you know, I know so many people. My area is an endemic area in New Jersey, but it is growing everywhere. And there are other diseases that are commingling with it to make people even sicker.
So did you have an encounter with Lyme personally that made you so passionate?
Well, I started it because of a constituent who came to one of my town meetings. Her name is Pat Smith, and she's still the head of the Lyme Disease Association, a great pioneer. Many of her family members suffered from it. So it was from that encounter that I began working on it, introduced this comprehensive bill in 1998, over 100 co-sponsors year in and year out, and I could not ever get it. And it baffled me as to why there was such institutional opposition to it.
Yeah.
I think they have something to hide. And if not, well, at least we're now, you know, it was actually Trump and Secretary Azar who did lion's work, did the lion's share of work. They did an NIH strategic plan for tick-borne diseases in 2019 that says we don't have an accurate way of determining whether or not you have it. We don't have therapeutics. And what are we doing to get rid of the ticks? They just grow with no real natural enemy to them. You know, very few, they're just growing exponentially, making everybody less safe.
So
I credit them with taking the science of it and finally coming up with an action plan. But then, lo and behold, some years later, my eldest daughter got chronic Lyme. Straight A student, tremendous athlete, mother of three. And all of a sudden, she, you know, had brain fog and all the other telltale signs of Lyme. She was diagnosed with it, after a really good test was done.
Right.
And then she went to a Lyme literate doctor because we need physician education as well.
Yeah.
And there was a blue ribbon panel put together. I've worked on that for decades as well. And they found that there needs to be physicians education as well. They're too quick to say, well, CDC says, you know, take some doxycycline and you're in the clear. That is absolutely untrue if you have chronic Lyme, and that's 10 to 20% of the cases.
Yeah. My guest today is Congressman Chris Smith. And Congressman, I'm curious, should the Defense Department get clearance from Congress on programs like this? And how does this fall into, like, the use of biologics in warfare? Are there any laws currently prohibiting this? I mean, this seems like
Yes, there is a law. Matter of fact, it was Richard Nixon who actually stopped it. We had a program, but it's all cloaked in secrecy. And there was also an international treaty that we were behind as a country and others to ban it, so that this wouldn't happen. But, the testing, you know, the number of ticks that they were testing at Plum Island, for example, and Fort Detrick,
right,
it's off the Richter scale. It's just so many. Mm-hmm. And again, if it wasn't for, Dr. Willie Bergdorfer, again, the credited with discovering Lyme, I mean, he's come, why aren't people more interested? I got an amendment passed, and I actually asked them to do it administratively, then did an amendment that passed in the House to say the Inspector General of the DOD should do this. They said they don't have the time, and the Senate killed the bill that year. I did it last year, and GAO does a very good job. They're very, very credible auditors and investigators, and they killed it in the Senate last year. So I'm back again this year saying, stop the cover-up. It's just, there's too many sick people, and we may get a glimpse as to what we can do to combat this if we knew the origins.
So what can we do? I mean, you have the nation, coast to coast right now, Congressman, listening to you. Should we call the Capitol switchboard, speak to our representative? I mean, what do you
without a doubt,
we do?
And the senators especially, it's in the Department of Defense bill, the National Defense Authorization Act, it's called. And if they just agree to it, we get this GAO study. And if they find there's nothing to it, GAO is very thorough and very honest. You know, we can look elsewhere. But I think, especially given Berchtofer's, you know, admissions, they're going to find a lot of wrongdoing here. And it is, you know, an experiment. You know, I do see shades of Wuhan here, of, you know, of how, you know, the cover up by the Chinese government. Yeah. And sometimes these scientists work, you know, across international boundaries, somehow thinking what they're doing is benign and it's anything but. Well, there was nothing benign about this. It was to make people and livestock in the Soviet Union sick. And, you know, the Plum Island books that came out years ago, which sparked my interest as well, you know, couldn't have been clearer. You know, one of them asserts that there were some biological warfare types that were brought over from Nazi Germany to help us develop a plan. Now, if the Soviets were doing it, that's one thing. You know, that doesn't mean we respond in kind.
Right. That's right.
And this wasn't done in a defensive mode, from as best we can tell. This was to how we can use it as an offensive weapon.
Well, I only have a moment or two left. I know you've got a very busy schedule, and I'm grateful for your time here. Before I let you go, I know you've been a great champion of life. We've talked about what's happening with the genocide in China with the Uyghurs. In our own country right now, there was a House resolution, 3755, misnamed the Women's Health Protection Act of 2021. And it shows what radical extremes those pro-choice, those who advocate for the culture of death in our country will go to protect what they feel is most sacred, and that's the right to kill an innocent child in the womb. I'd love your thoughts on this. It was so disappointing to see this come forward. I'm really concerned where this leads, but if you don't mind, how do you see this and what's next?
That, you know, we actually called it the Abortion on Demand Until Birth Act, because that's precisely what it would do. It goes beyond Roe versus Wade, which is already a terrible policy that has caused the death of over 62.5 million unborn baby boys and girls. But this bill goes beyond it, and it eviscerates, it ends all of these modest state laws by design. It's right in the plain text of the bill, like women's right to know laws, waiting periods, parental involvement laws, which help get the mom and dad at least aware so that they can, you know, hopefully intervene and say, please reconsider to their 14 or 15 or 17-year-old daughter, you know, all of this is gone in this bill. It's right there. Even, you know, the pollsters show, and the Marist poll is probably one of the best, and I talked about it during my floor debates comments, that Americans really do want restrictions. Many want, you know, the unborn protected completely, but the overwhelming number of people will say, we need serious restrictions on the killing of these unborn children. And this bill is so radical, so extreme, so outside the mainstream of American thought that it would do what like 10% of the people in this country want, and that is abortion, unfettered access. And it was brought up. It passed. One Democrat, Henry Cuellar of Texas, voted no, a true profile in courage.
Wow. Awesome.
And every single Republican voted no as well. We are the pro-life party.
Amen.
You know, I wish we had bipartisanship more than just Henry.
Me too. Well, Congressman, thank you. Thanks for what you
thank
do.
You.
I hope you serve the country for years. We need good men
like
you.
Oh, thank you. I hope so, too.
And I'm grateful for all you do. Thanks for filling us in on Lyme. I'm going to be speaking to a physician who specializes in that coming up as well. We're going to give everyone the Capitol switchboard and ask them to take action on both of these points.
That would be great.
You have
a
great
GAO report. What do we have to lose?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
People say,
exactly.
Oh, it's, I mean, I even gave copies of Bitten, Chris Newby's book, to members of the Inspector General's office and said, please read it. Read two chapters, and I think you'll see we have a problem here, Houston, and we need to address it.
You got it. Well, God bless you. Enjoy the rest of your day, and keep up your good work, okay?
Thank you, Drew, and you keep up your great work.
You got it. That's Congressman Chris Smith. Say a prayer for him, too, as he says, on the front lines of life and also pulling back the veil on some of these other issues such as Lyme's disease. And when I saw that, I just had to say, you know, bravo to him. There's another man who I know who has seen the rise in Lyme's disease. And he says to me before, he said, look, it's nothing to play around with. You get fever, enlarged lymph nodes. You get flu-like symptoms. You have joint pain. Some see meningitis, heart disease. You've got chronic fatigue. I mean, if you've had Lyme or you know somebody who has, you know how dangerous this is. According to some experts, it can last a long time if it's not properly treated. You might battle this for life. So for a lot of people, it is not just frustrating, it's debilitating. As Congressman Smith pointed out, physicians misdiagnose it all the time. They don't give you the right course of treatment. But weaponizing a disease like this by putting it into more ticks could have serious impacts on the population. I'm joined right now by Dr. Robert Tobolli, and he is not only a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois, a regular here on the show, but he cares for people with long-term cases of Lyme's disease, and it's good to have him with us today. Doctor, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Nice to be with you, Drew. It was really exciting listening to Congressman Smith doing a good job.
He's on the front lines. Patrick, do you have that song I asked you to have ready? I don't know if you have that or not, my call screener. Well, I want to play something for you, Doctor, before we get into some serious stuff. And this is for you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, happy birthday. Birthday. Happy birthday, Bob. It's Dr. Bob Tobolli's birthday as well. And, you know, over the course of the pandemic and even beyond, he has been here with us. I hope you're having a great day. I just want to ask everybody to pray for you. We're going to pray for you during the chapel today. But I'm grateful for you giving us some of your time on this, the day of your birth.
Well, thank you very much. I'm keeping up with all the responses to all the happy birthdays that are coming in from all these social media avenues. So, good. But in any case, yeah, my wife gets my age wrong. She keeps adding on years that aren't there, and then she smiles.
I love her. Well, I hope Tamaki spoils you tonight. That's for sure. Hey, I know we only have a few minutes. I want to talk to you about Lyme, though, because this affects so many people. As you know, I mean, you're one of those doctors who's really on the cutting edge. You set up a practice just to deal with this in particular. I saw a Newsweek article. The head of the American Lyme Disease Foundation was skeptical of what Congressman Smith was just saying. He claims there's evidence that Lyme was present in the U.S. even before Columbus arrived in 1492. How do most physicians look at it? What do we know about it? What can you share with us?
Well, you know, that book, Bitten, is kind of interesting. In it, the author actually puts forward that there might be a co-agent along with the spirochete Lyme that causes Lyme disease, called the Swiss agent, which is a rickettsia, which is another tick-borne illness. And that was something that Dr. Bergdorfer was working on in his lab. And he thought that was a major player in actually human Lyme disease. But Lyme is commonly misdiagnosed by doctors. It's really kind of poo-pooed by many, many docs. And so if they see a classic rash, they may think it's cellulitis and put you on a medicine that is directed towards regular staph and strep cellulitis but doesn't affect the Lyme organism. The organism is carried by ticks that are so small, about smaller than the size of a head of a pin, and you can get bit with one of these things and never know it. It doesn't stick out from your skin. Most people that have one on their skin think it's a blackhead or maybe a little freckle, but it doesn't look like the normal tick. They're so small. They take their blood meal. In exchange for the blood, they give you whatever they've got circulating inside them, and they could have any one of four or five different pathogens: Bartonella, Ehrlichia, wow. Anaplasma. These are other types of.
Wow, that's amazing. My guest today, Dr. Bob Tobolli. And Bob, Dr. Tobolli, let's take a few phone calls for you. Patrick, is he still there? I just lost him in my headset, so we'll see if Dr. Tobolli is still with us. In fact, let me do this. I mean, Rachel is listening in California. She was diagnosed with it in her 20s and is now having neurological problems. We'll take her call. If you want to get in, I have Dr. Tobolli for a short window today, but we'd love to hear from you. The number to join the conversations, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Back with more right after this.
The voice of reason for our nation. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All the news and issues now that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me today. It's good to be with you. If you missed any part of the conversation, be sure to go to relevantradio.com and do a search for the name. You can go to our podcast. You might want to share this with somebody. I know a lot of people recently have been battling Lyme's disease, and I was shocked when I heard Congressman Chris Smith, the congressman from New Jersey, talking about how the Defense Department may be weaponizing Lyme's disease. You know the effects of it, how chronic it can be, how debilitating, how crippling, from everything from flu-like symptoms to meningitis to just chronic fatigue. And I'm joined today by Dr. Robert Tabali. He is an expert in this field. He's been caring for people with long-term cases of Lyme's disease, and you can check him out at germbuster.com. Doctor, let's go right to the phones. We'll grab a couple calls. Rachel was bit by one of those Lyme ticks, and she has suffered as a result of it. Rachel, hi. You're on the air with Dr. Tabali.
Hi, Drew. Thank you for accepting my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
Dr. Tabali, I was diagnosed here in California in my early 20s with Lyme disease. I did get bit by the tick and have a reaction. And now I'm in my early 50s. I did have COVID earlier in January. I'm having nerve pain down from my neck, down to my hands, really severe, and stiffness in my jaw. And I didn't even remember about my Lyme disease diagnosis until my parents reminded me. It was so bad, I had to take a semester off of college and then make up that semester. So I don't know. I mean, they're doing MRI. They've done MRIs on my neck and so forth. Should I mention the Lyme disease? Can you have still symptoms so long after?
Well, if someone gets infected with Lyme and they're not treated properly, the disease course parallels syphilis. And so what happens with syphilis is you can have latent disease or subclinical disease where you don't even know you have or don't have any symptoms. But years later or decades later, there can be a complex series of symptoms that can arise that you might not recognize as Lyme disease. It's frequently neuropathy, memory loss, difficulty walking and gait and that type of thing. Other people get heart disease where they have conduction defects and need pacemakers and things like that. But if Lyme not properly treated stays with the person for life. There's also some skin conditions. There's something called lichen sclerosis atrophicus, which in some women, it's actually been identified to be in one article. They found Lyme particles in the scarring issues that occur in that disease, and also other types of lichen sclerosis might be a form of chronic Lyme disease. But it's very important that someone get treated appropriately and promptly. The easiest time to treat Lyme disease is when you first get it, and using a few weeks or a couple of months of oral antibiotics can completely eradicate it. But if it's been present with a person for more than 6 months or a year, it can disseminate and cause silent infection in the central nervous system, from which it's very, very difficult to treat. And at that point, in my practice, we use intravenous antibiotics for at least a month duration at that point in those patients.
Right. All right, Rachel, thank you for the call. Hang in there. I would certainly tell my physician about it as well. And doctor, I only have a moment or two left, but I just want to follow up on what Congressman Chris Smith is alerting the nation to. And he's talking about the weaponization of this type of disease. Now, radically different than COVID, which is highly contagious. How would this be weaponized? I mean, what does weaponized Lyme disease look like? And how would it be dispersed?
Well, the theory is that it was actually developed in a bioweapons lab or augmented in a bioweapons lab, you know, similar to the coronavirus type of thing, and that it escaped. And when you have bioterrorism agents, you have class A, like anthrax, that kills people right away, class B, that doesn't kill people, but it incapacitates the population, makes them sick so they can't really do anything. And so there's bioweapon advantages to having something that, you know, might not kill off the population, but spread around, in a subterranean way, unrecognized, and cause people not to be able to be productive and work in industries or work in the military and get things done. So it's not that it's being weaponized now, but in the 40s and 50s is the thought, and that it may have been released on. There's a Plum Island, which is right. Interesting history. They work with all sorts of exotic infectious diseases and animals and things like that. And there have been multiple escapes of things from that island in the yes. past. It's well intentioned. I mean, it's way off the mm-hmm. coast, but people come and go, and they can bring things with them.
Yeah, so, some strange things have been reported around that island. So that's for sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Doctor. Final thoughts. Feel free to go right ahead.
So I've established a practice called the St. Roch Center, St. Roch Center, after St. Rocco. He's a patron saint of pestilence. I myself have had Lyme and serious neurologic Lyme with Bell's palsy. I actually got it on both sides of my face. And I frequently show people that picture. But if anyone has any questions about Lyme disease, they can contact me through germbusters.com. Soon we'll have the website up for the St. Roch Center. But I'm establishing an office out in a hyperendemic area in northwestern Illinois, where I hope to obtain some grants and do some bench research study on Lyme disease, and devote a lot of my future scientific life to that.
Well, I hope you are successful in doing that. And I'll tell you what, we'll be praying for you today during the chaplet, not just for your birthday, but for all that God has in store for your future. Hey, enjoy the rest of your day. And again, I just want to thank you publicly for your contribution over the months, the years now, giving us insight into so much of this infectious disease, especially COVID. So appreciate you being here.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Happy birthday, Doctor. That's Dr. Bob Tabali. Say a prayer for him. It's his birthday today. Great day. And I hope, if you are battling COVID, I would check him out. I think he's one of the foremost experts on it. I have a friend in the area I broadcast in, and she has had it. Her kids have had it. And boy, I'm telling you, it's the real deal. Let me bring you up to speed on some other things that are happening right now. There was a House panel on Saturday. You might have missed this news. They passed the $3.5 trillion package that will now go to the full House for consideration next. But look, it's not clear that this bill could pass the Senate. There's a lot going on. There are some progressive Democrats who are trying to tie the bill to the $1.2 trillion infrastructure package that the Senate already passed, which House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is scheduled for a vote this Thursday. So it's not at all clear, that they'll be successful in doing that. But let me share with you some commentary or some insight from Joe Concha. He reflected on this on Fox News. Listen.
Here's the deal, to use a Biden term. That's true. It's not $3.5 trillion. It is misleading. It's more like $5.5 trillion, $6 trillion when you look at all the gimmicks that are in there. In other words, there are programs that are in place that are supposed to expire in 2 years, 3 years. And then once you put a program in place, once you give people something, it's very hard to extract that from them. Obamacare being an example, right? Once the government gives you something, then you can't say, we're not going to give it to you anymore. So to that statement to be said on a show like Reliable Sources, ironically enough labeled, is completely misleading, because when you say, well, it's completely paid for, no one can exactly explain how that, again, this is trillions of dollars, guys. This isn't billions, trillions. It's a number that people can't quite get their number around. How do you pay for it? Oh, well, we tax the rich. You can tax the rich all you want. You can't pay for $3.5 trillion just by taxing the rich alone. Everybody pays for this in one way or another, guys.
Yeah, and it's such a great point. What a mess. What an absolute mess. I'm going to share with you coming up a little bit later where this mega spending ultimately leads. I had a friend I was with not too long ago, and she sent me a speech that Khrushchev gave at the UN in September of 1959. And he predicted how the U.S. could ultimately fall. You got to remember that socialism leads to communism. And he made the case of making a socialistic state. How do you do it? He says there are 8 levels of control. Healthcare is one of those. you know, poverty, gun control, debt, welfare, education, religion, class warfare. He goes to this whole litany of things. I'll break it all down for you. But when you see what is being proposed right now by Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and so many others, it's frightening. If the House passes the $3.5 trillion package, it would have to get through the Senate. And then there are some senators, some Democratic senators there, like Kirsten Sinema from Arizona, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, who are going to oppose it just because they put on their sanity hat. They're saying this is insane. You know, the price tag on this thing is just too enormous. You're putting a yoke on future generations, and it's just not right. Some of the things they want to fund, as you know, are problematic. So we'll see. Right now, this is a huge moment, but I go back to what I've said before. Votes have consequences. I'm not saying that about, oh, you know, Trump didn't win. That's not the point. You've got to know who you're putting in office in Congress, who's going to represent you in the Senate, who's going to be, you know, your who's going to be the nomination for Supreme Court, and so many of these other issues. Votes have consequences. You might not like the orange man, right? You may not like how bombastic he is, or you might not like this candidate or that candidate. You got to get past the superficial, and you got to look at what is most important. And that is, what principles are they standing on, and what is their long-term vision for America? Because look, they'll be in office and out of office, but the decisions and the policies they enact will not only affect tens of millions, hundreds of millions, but can affect generations. And I think that's what we're seeing now. You see the fight for life that's going on. I mean, you see that, you know, in our country right now. So we've talked about that. We'll talk much more about that in the days ahead. Voters in Switzerland, we'll look outside our borders for a moment. They passed a referendum that allows same-sex couples to again, quote, marry. Switzerland, 64% of their voters agreed to allow this imitation of the real thing. And I hope I don't sound uncharitable, but this is not marriage. It's not how God intended it. And they're one of the last European nations to do so. So you can see how, oh gosh, the slippery slope gets slippier. That's not a word. Gets more slippery as you slide down it, right? You just see how things accelerate when you move in this direction. You could see how people become desensitized to these truths and these realities. They're right now the 30th country in the world to make this legal. And I saw a report in the BBC. They say the measure is also going to make it possible for same-sex couples to adopt unrelated children, and for married, you know, lesbian couples to have children through sperm donations. So this is the bad fruit of a bad seed, of a bad decision. And look, I think eventually truth always comes to the surface. In the end, I think we'll get these issues right. That's not without suffering. It's not without seeing the consequences or having to endure the passion that comes with these poor decisions. And unfortunately, you know, I think our country, along with so many others who've gone down this path out of a spirit of, I think some believe it's charitable and it's non-discriminatory and it's wonderful. I just don't see the big picture there. You know, sometimes the truth is hard. It really is. You know, the Ten Commandments were given to us for a reason, weren't they? I mean, the laws that God gave us were not because he wants to restrict us, but he wants us to be truly free. You know, that's what true freedom is. It's not being able to do anything you want. It's doing what you ought to, right? And you know, this unbridled freedom, I think it leads to vice, and I ultimately think it leads to great suffering. I do. I think it leads to slavery. It does. Doing what's right and what's moral, that leads to true freedom. It really does. Let's talk about something lighter. How's that? All right. I love football, right? I watched the NFL over the weekend. And because, you know, I told you last week I had hurt my back. I don't know what the heck is going on. I didn't lift anything heavy. It wasn't in any accident. I walk every night. You know, I have no problem bending over. Could touch my toes. The whole thing. I turned the wrong way getting out of my chair here in the studio. And I had to be helped. I had to be helped actually to my car by my producer, and I had to call my wife when I got home to help me out of my car in my garage. It's like, honey, I can't get out of the car. So I've been kind of laid up. It was kind of weird. I'm feeling much better today. So thank you for your prayers. I did ask you to pray for me. But I got to enjoy football. I got to watch an awful lot of it, too, right? And I don't know if you caught this or not. The kicker for the Baltimore Ravens, right? He entered the NFL history books last night. Unbelievable kick. His name is Justin Tucker. And he is a vibrant Catholic. And he spoke about his Catholic faith. He made history yesterday with a record breaker. Take a listen to this from Baltimore Ravens Radio Network.
Tucker, it would be the longest in NFL history if it's good. A 66-yard try. Tucker's kick is on the way. It is good! Crossbar, and it tumbles through. It is good! Time has expired. Justin Tucker with the longest field goal in NFL history. The hay is in the barn, and it's mayhem on the field. 8 years after he hit a 61-yarder to win in Detroit, has silenced the crowd with the longest field goal in NFL history. 66 yards.
Wow. I mean, what a call, huh? Doesn't that just get you going? I mean, wow. I just love the announcer making that particular call. So, and bravo to my fellow Catholic, Justin Tucker. Way to go, brother. As I said, he's now made history. That's a long kick. I don't know when we'll see that. That record broken. 66-yard field goal is a long way to go. The clock ran out of time, and they beat the poor Detroit Lions. Or 19-17, I think it was the final score. The kick actually hit the crossbars, but the ball went in, and it lifted the Ravens' score up for the win. I don't know if you watched Sunday night football. I don't want to talk too much football here, but, boy, what an exciting finish for the Green Bay Packers over the San Francisco 49ers with 37 seconds left. You know, MVP and Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers moved his team down the field, and a field goal won that game for them as well. So sports are back. Little escape, right, from some of the so much of the ugliness that we do sometimes have to talk about, some of the reality in our world. But look, we were chosen to live at this particular moment in time. And we're called to carry the cross. We're called to be lights. We're called to be witnesses in the world. In fact, I heard our own Father Rocky on the air earlier this morning. And in fact, I hope you'll join me tomorrow, because I'm going to be joined by the president of EWTN. Mike Warsaw is going to be stopping by. But if you are a listener to Relevant Radio, if you subscribe to our app, or if you're plugged into us, you got the notification earlier this morning that Relevant Radio, EWTN, and the Napa Institute are doing something that they really believe will make a difference in this country, especially in the fight for life. Patrick, let's run a little bit of Father Rocky. This is Father Rocky making that announcement earlier this morning.
Today, we've got a very big announcement. Just moments ago, 3 minutes ago, Relevant Radio, EWTN, and the Napa Institute issued a joint press release announcing our common effort to pray and promote the daily recitation of the rosary during the month of October. That starts on Friday. We're praying for the intention of the end of legal abortion in America and the outpouring of support for expectant mothers. In so doing, we're hoping to mobilize millions of Americans to pray the rosary daily. Now, our listeners, they can join us as they do each evening on the Family Rosary Across America at 7 p.m. Central Time, or on our app any time of the day, or they can pray it on their own, or they pray it with EWTN. They do it twice daily, or whatever, with Napa Institute. What's really beautiful here, Patrick, is, you know, this is the first time that Relevant Radio and EWTN and Napa have collaborated on a joint project. And we're hoping that many other Catholic organizations across America follow our lead and follow suit to pray the rosary, to promote the daily rosary during the month of October for this intention. Just think, if we get the Knights of Columbus on board, or Fellowship of Catholic University students, they have a network where they reach out to 100,000 students, or St. Paul's Outreach, or 40 Days for Life. You know, they've got millions of Americans praying already. Yeah. Parishes, schools, universities, Catholic high schools, crisis pregnancy centers, Bible study groups, Ascension Press, Augustine Institute, Dynamic Catholic, Word on Fire, et cetera. If everybody can kind of get on the same theme, that during this month of October, to pray the rosary for that intention. Because on our own, Irrelevant Radio, I don't think we're able to get to a million people every night. But with others, we could, and that's the important thing. And so
that was Father Rocky. We'll play more, and actually we'll talk much more about that in days ahead. I think it's a phenomenal initiative. Coming up in about 15 minutes, you and I can pray the chaplet, but these are weapons, spiritual weapons given to us. I really believe that. They can make a difference. They move the heart of God, and I think a prayer campaign of this magnitude with major organizations like Relevant and EWTN and NAPA getting together, we're going to see the fruit of it. And as you see how things are accelerating right now, I've talked about that slippery slope. Boy, we need to do something more than ever, and I'm glad you can join us and be part of it. I'll keep you up to speed on all of it. But I have to take a short pause right now. When we come back, I'll fill you in on some other news that's developing in cities all around the country, perhaps even yours. Stay with me.
This is the Drew Mariani Show. Listen in to the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
She's battling breast cancer.
Where we're here for you.
Suffering cystic fibrosis.
Every afternoon at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific.
Thank you so much.
On Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the news and issues
now
that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, coming up in just a minute, we will pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Let's pray for our country. I think we need to do that more than ever. I ask God always to protect us from degeneration, from disaster, from disease, from war. I pray for the conversion of our leaders and for our enemies. Last year was not a good year for us. You know, not only did the pandemic start last year along with the shutdown, we see the economic woes from that, but then we had the riots starting right after Memorial Day. Remember those with George Floyd? Horrible death that man endured. Died at the hands of a Minneapolis police officer. And just as a side note, Derek Chauvin, the former officer, was convicted of the murder in Floyd's death. He's appealed the finding and the verdict. So this is not over yet. We'll continue to cover that story for you. But anyway, along with these riots and everything else came unemployment. We had a contentious election, whole host of other things. But one of the things that really struck me was the huge increase in the murder rate. I mean, this is the United States of America, and it always troubles me to see that. The FBI released its crime statistics last Friday. And I'll tell you as a friend, they weren't good. I mean, violent crime overall grew 5% between 2019 and 2020. And what drove the numbers up? Well, it was the 30% increase in number of murders around the country. 21,000 homicides were reported last year. And that's not the whole story. I saw a CNN report that only 85% of police departments across the country, they participated in the survey. And that some of the largest agencies like New York and Chicago and New Orleans, they didn't put in their reports, apparently. So those numbers could be far higher. I mean, you hear about how many people die in Chicago all the time, right? The FBI reporting requirements have become a lot more stringent, demanding more time to complete. And right now, many departments have very low crime solving rates. And one of the reports says that the police only solve 2% of all major crimes. I was stunned by that. You got to be kidding me. 2% of all major crimes are solved. Others say, hey, come on, it's better than that, but it's still below 50%. So I've invited today an expert in this area. He's the author of 50 books on criminal justice and law enforcement, including Crime and Aquinas and Aquinas in the Courtroom. He's also a professor and the director of the Criminal Justice Program at Franciscan University in Steubenville. They got a great program. If you're interested, maybe we'll get you plugged into that. It's great to have with us today Dr. Charles Nemeth. Professor, good afternoon. Good to have you back.
Good afternoon, Drew, and I'm always delighted to be here.
Stunning numbers. I mean, I find some of those numbers almost hard to believe. A 30% increase is huge. In fact, it's unprecedented. What happened? What are you seeing? How do you explain these numbers?
Well, and you didn't mention Chicago. You did mention Chicago, but Chicago's already at 778, which exceeds all of last year's data. So we're only into September, and they've already surpassed it. So in any event, the numbers are staggeringly bleak. That's the only way you can describe them. I mean, I have a host of reasons why I think this is true. Yeah. But it starts right with the police and how they're functioning at this point. I mean, you've got the defund police movement, or if that's not satisfactory, you have a whole group of people who want to eliminate the police department, and or you have another group of people who want to change their police authority and replace it with social workers and human services workers, or you change police presence in all these communities, which is what they've done in these horrifyingly bad numbers cities. So instead of having a proactive, community-driven, visible police force, you now have a reactive, hidden, and removed, as if they were an occupying army police force. Right. And lastly, in terms of policing, we used to believe in the broken windows theory, where you took care of all the small problems because all the small problems added up to larger problems. Well, now we have abject neglect. We no longer have any broken windows theory. So the streets are littered with garbage and with homeless camps and with tents. And all of this stuff intermixes and creates this horrifying climate, this culture of anti-policing. And without these people being able to do their jobs as they usually do, why is anybody surprised the numbers keep skyrocketing? And they're not going to go away if we don't let our police do their job. That's certainly one part of it.
Yeah, no, I'd love to hear your other theory, too. I couldn't, but let's speak about this one point, because I could not agree with you more. I saw a report, I think last week I was watching the news. I think the defund the police movement has a lot to do with it. I mean, I saw the murder rates in Seattle and Chicago and all these other places. They're all skyrocketing. And I'm thinking, when you want to defund the police and bring in social workers or reduce your police department, this is going to be the byproduct of it. And the mayor, Mayor Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago, wants to start putting more money into the budget for policing. I mean, that's the antithesis of what we saw not too long ago, but they're seeing the bad fruit of a bad decision. How much of the defund the police movement really exacerbated this problem? Because I don't recall numbers like this. It's only after we began to do that that we saw the societal breakdown.
I think the correlation is not only anecdotal, it's directly observable. Again, like a city where I worked in many years in New York City, the police used to be on every street corner. They used to be on every block. They were proactive in the community. But now you rarely ever see police officers like you used to in New York City, because they were construed as the enemy of the people. And so without them on the street, constantly observing, constantly interacting, I don't know why people are surprised that the gangbangers and the bad people are roaming all over the place. They're throwing buckets of paint on police cars. They're doing all this stuff, which manifests a complete disregard of law and order. So what you're seeing is chaos. And you mentioned defund. Mm-hmm. Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota wanted to eliminate the police department and call it something else. So it would be a more warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, they want to reimagine policing. I mean, that was the buzzword that was out there. Let's reimagine the policing. My guest today, Dr. Charles Nemeth, and Doctor, I want to thank you for being here. I do, and for your insight. We're having we just lost a doctor temporarily here, so we may not be able to get back to him. But you know, look, the murder rate rose by almost 30% in 2020, and it's now rising. It's now rising even at a slower rate in 2021, but it's still on the rise. The increase in U.S. murders this summer doesn't be as large as the record spiker of last summer. So are things changing? That's a great question. I don't know. Let's pray for our country, as I said, for peace. Let's pray for sanity, because this is really, I think, a departure from logic and from reason. It doesn't take a brain scientist, right, to determine you defund your police. This is what you're going to ultimately end up seeing. And that's kind of the fruit of what's now unfolding here. Hey, if you want to join me coming up in just a second here, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. And I'd love to have you join me. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We'll take your calls. I just want to give you a quick heads up. I know we've been having just a little bit of issues on our phone. So for some reason, if you can't get through or if you get dropped, please just continue to call back, okay? Because we love to get you on, and we'd love to be able to pray for you. That's for sure. And we're seeing the fruit of this prayer. I mean, the miracles that continue to to abound are just absolutely amazing. And as those miracles occur to you, I'd ask you to please go ahead and to just write to me and tell us about them. You can do that, drew@relevantradio.com. That's drew@relevantradio.com. Is Dr. Nemeth back, Patrick? Is that what I see on my screen here? No. Okay. I'm not sure if that's him or not. Doctor, are you with me? All right. Apparently, we're having just a little bit of technical issues. I said my apologies to everyone who's trying to communicate with us here. We'll get you on the air if I can. If not, we'll just pray together universally. But again, 888-914-9149 to get in with us. And, of course, I'll take your petitions as well. Patrick will also take your petitions at our Twitter page. And this is something we've been doing recently. You can go to Twitter if you don't get through on these phone lines or for some reason your email doesn't get read. It's at Drew Mariani Show. And we tend to try to, during one of our decades here, share some of those intentions on the air. But and I just want, before we pray, just want to just thank you personally. I know it takes time to sit down and to write, but I'm so grateful for everyone who said, Drew, I can't believe the test results. I can't believe the finances. I can't believe the conversion. I can't believe how this prayer got answered. And it inspires me. You know, it really helps to deepen my own faith in the power of this incredible prayer. So let's pray together when we come back. All right? We'll do that right after this.